January.
No, no, no. This was a horrible idea. No, what the hell was I thinking? Tasha mutters. Lets herself be wrangled down the hallway by her bodyguard anyway. No. Stepping up the bucket list and helping Winter defeat Hydra had sounded like an awesome plan. Right up until she realized that step one of said plan would have to be talking to Pepper. Face to face. In a private setting where Pepper can actually yell at her to her heart's content. Pepper can yell a lot. And at impressive volume. And a lot. Really, very a lot. And after 4 months of avoiding the other woman like the plague, Tasha might deserve it. Possibly. That's even worse. Please? She tries, grabbing for the nearest door jamb and holding on. Winter karate swipes her elbows away, and just keeps moving her like she's a sack of flour instead of a fully grown woman fighting for her life. Or her dignity, at least. I liked you better when you were all confused puppy nice to me. Did not, he retorts. Because since they made an enemy of one of the most powerful men in the world together, he's been snarky as fuck at her, and forgotten anything he may have remembered about personal boundaries. Which, fair. She started with the snuggling. I have created a monster. That happened long before you were born. He parries, and then gives her a last whack between the shoulder blades to send her careening into the living room. I hate you! She snaps at him, and then rounds to smile and wave at Pep, who doesn't look amused at all. Hi, Peps! How's it going? And here it comes. Pepper draws a deep breath, crosses her arms under her chest, and lets loose. How is it going? How is it going, Tasha? You tell me how it is going! 4 months ago, Obi died and you disappeared, leaving me to try to run your company without anyone's help or the authority I needed to do anything. You just disappeared and left me to pick up the mess. I don't even know what the hell you were doing, if you were okay, if you were still alive. Jarvis wouldn't talk to me beyond sending me something every now and then, and Rhodey and Happy knew nothing, and you were just gone. It was Afghanistan all over again, Tasha. How could you do that? What kind of asshole do you have to be to simply lock everyone you know out of your life and barricade yourself inside your own house for months without giving anyone a chance to talk to you? I should just quit, you inconsiderate bitch! She deserves this. Pepper is actually using a bad word. Red in the face and incandescent with anger that's really just worry and hurt. And Tasha deserves this. I thought you were dead, Tasha! Again! That too. It was right after Obi, and you were so screwed up. And until you started popping up at SI again and avoiding me, I really thought Jarvis would call to notify me of your death any day. I thought I'd have to find your body in the workshop. And that. If you ever, ever pull anything like that again, I will murder you. And then I'll quit for real. That as well. And then Pepper throws her arms around Tasha and squeezes tightly enough to hurt her chest. And Tasha hates herself a little for what she did to her friend. For what she is about to do. I'm sorry, Pep. She murmurs into a riot of red hair, quietly and carefully, and takes the pain in her chest from pressure on the reactor casing as her due punishment for being an asshole. The other woman nods slowly. Let's go. Pulls herself together in under a minute. Frighteningly efficient, as always. Then the redhead finally acknowledges Winter, hanging back quietly. He's dressed in black jeans and a long-sleeve shirt. Charcoal instead of black. Tasha bargained for half an hour for that. His hair is swept into a low ponytail, and his hands, flesh and metal alike, are hidden under leather gloves. He looks vaguely threatening and unfairly hot. "Who's that?" her PA asks, surreptitiously dabbing under her eyes and then straightening visibly. "Business again." Tasha waves him over. "Bandit, meet Pepper Potts, the most amazing PA ever. Pep, meet James Winter, my new bodyguard." And then less showy. "He is part of what's going on." They shake hands. It's all very civilized. Then Pepper turns back to her. "Bodyguard? Since when do you need a live-in bodyguard?" "Because they both know, as much as they love Happy, he's really kind of awful at his job. The security portion of his job has always been more for his ego than for Tasha's actual safety. She's never wanted security before. Needed it, sure. But she's always counted on her own wits to get her out of a tight spot, and never wanted a gorilla looming over her shoulder, proving to the chauvinist assholes she works with that she's too weak to look after herself." Tasha practiced her speech on why she changed her mind and how Winter is different for half an hour. What she actually says now is something completely different. "Come on," she orders, pointing toward the sofa and leading the way. They sit. They wait for her to talk. "Do you remember when I said there had to be a reason I survived?" she finally asks, hand going to the reactor, biting her tongue hard to swallow, even though I didn't survive at all. Hesitantly, Pepper nods. She, at least, knows what this kind of conversation costs Tasha. "So I may have found that reason. There is something bad happening, Pep, and I can help make it go away. I can..." She recoils, because there's no fixing what Hydra has done. But she needs to freeze it somehow. "Help make it better. Winter is a part of that. We look after each other, and we work together. That's why he's here, okay?" "It's not true. Not really. Reason, purpose, those are for heroes. Tasha is no hero, and she doesn't believe in redemption, in amends. She believes..." "Tasha is no hero. But this is a version, some small sliver of something like truth, that Pepper can accept. Because Pepper is good and full of faith in the world, and she believes in reasons, in purposes. So that's what Tasha gives her, in the hope that the woman won't spit on her grave a few months from now, hating her." Another nod. "Is it dangerous?" No sense in lying. "Yes." "Is it going to get you killed?" "Not if the Palladium does her in first." "It might." "Can I convince you to let it be?" "No." The redhead nods, quiet and solemn. "What do you need me to do?" "What makes you think..." Tasha trails off at the sharp look she receives. "I know you, Tasha, and I know that you could have kept up the disappearing act indefinitely. What do you need?" Quick, efficient, and to the point. There was a reason Tasha hired the woman all those years ago. She grabs a wrapped parcel from the coffee table and passes it to her friend. Merry belated Christmas, and I'm terribly sorry. Pepper unwraps silently, opens the box inside, leafs through the contract, signed by all parties but one. Startled, she turns back to Tasha. Are you giving me your company? No, I'm still majority shareholder. That isn't changing. At least not yet. Not until her will is read. I am, however, making you CEO of my company. Come on, Peps, you've been faking my signature for years. Now you can just sign POTS and it'll even be legal. It won't even really change anything. You've been running SI for a long time. I just do what you tell me to. And now you won't have to tell me anymore. You can just do it yourself and probably do it better too. Awesome, right? Ta-da! She might be overselling this, but she really needs Pepper to sign. Because if she doesn't, then SI is going to go to the sharks when she croaks, and they'll go back to making weapons, and that is not acceptable. If Pepper doesn't sign, Tasha might have to sabotage her own company so no weapon will ever again have Stark written on it. Which she would absolutely do, make no mistake, but she wouldn't enjoy it. Not like she's going to enjoy kicking Fury's ass or wiping Hydra off the face of the earth. Pepper's nose scrunches in that adorable way it does when she's thinking hard. Uh-oh. Why now? Why not 4 months ago? Believe it or not, let's give away my company is not my first thought when I'm busy. That, and she didn't get around to having the papers drawn up until November. After that, it was just procrastination. She thought she still had time, after all. Didn't expect to make an enemy of the King of the Spies and pick up someone else's vendetta on the way. Pep nods, picks up the contract, and stands. We'll finalize this tomorrow in my office, in front of witnesses. And don't think I didn't notice that you're distracting me with your company. She decrees, already every inch the boss Tasha never wanted to have. But I'll let you off the hook for today. Will that be all, Miss Stark? And that's... they're not okay. Tasha cut her best friend out of her life for 4 long months, and she only let her back in because she needed her. She fucked up. More epically than usual, and this time she probably won't be able to fix it. Won't live long enough to grovel properly. But this? Pepper asking that old question with a small smile on her face? That means that Pep doesn't hate Tasha. It means there's hope. It means the other woman hasn't given up on her yet. It's enough for Tasha. More than. One less regret when she dies. She smiles back and doesn't hug her again as she answers. That'll be all, Miss Potts. The new CEO of Stark Industries nods, shakes Winter's hand again. It was nice to meet you, Mr. Winter. We should get together and talk dirt about Miss Stark at some point. Winter nods, smirking. We should. Tasha whines under her breath. Then Pepper Potts takes her two good self and her 5-inch heels back to SI, leaving Tasha to stare after her and not say, "Forgive me for what I am about to do." Or worse yet, "Goodbye." Instead, she turns to the assassin waiting patiently by her side and asks, "How about we blow some shit up?"
I think I left the oven on,
Tasha says, the suit's mechanics rendering her voice asexual and flat. Winter turns back from his vantage point, stares at her. There is a cigarette dangling from the corner of his mouth, which is terribly unprofessional of him, but also unfairly sexy, damn him. She's tried to explain smoking in the 21st century to him, but he just got confused over why society tries to dictate how he harms his own body. And she couldn't really argue that, because, let's face it, if it's chemical and doesn't kill you, Tasha has tried it. He takes a last drag, throws it away, stubs it out with his boot. Ready to roll. Goddamn. They are in Wisconsin. Well, Iron Man and the Winter Soldier are. Tasha Stark and her new bodyguard are being sighted en route to New York, courtesy of Jarvis and his exemplary hacking skills. The last time Tasha checked, he had dozens of fake Tumblr, Facebook, and Twitter accounts, with history solid enough to make just about anything they post credible. And then, within hours, viral. If Jarvis tells the internet Tasha Stark has been sighted at LAX, you damn well better believe she has. Anything to keep Iron Man and Tasha separate. She'll need it for what she's about to do. Winter keeps staring at her, as if he can discern anything from a hunk of metal. Waiting, she realizes too late, for her to pull back. Get out and cut her losses. So far, this has all been theoretical. In 30 minutes, it won't be. She considers it. Turning around, taking off, flying to New York, spending her last few months tinkering in the lab, pretending she's never heard about a man who is a one-armed ghost. But... Winter can't take on Shieldra alone, and they have Stark weapons, and Nick Fury made Tasha afraid. Rolling her shoulders, she shakes her head.
Never mind. Jarvis can totally turn it off for me.
Winter nods. Stay here. Wait. And then he's gone. Jogging into the darkness of an unpopulated area at midnight. Above them, stars wheel prettily. It reminds Tasha of Afghanistan, the night after she fought her way out. The cool was welcome, but the vast darkness of the desert at night made her feel like she'd already died. Via comlink, she hears an old wooden door swing open. With the suit's infrared vision, she can see her partner entering the old farmhouse through the back door. Upstairs, she provides. Probably asleep, lying down at any rate. Winter doesn't react, just adjusts his course, enters the bedroom on silent feet. Closes the door and stands, very still, at what is probably the end of the bed. For long minutes. A shadow in the dark, looming like a nightmare. Tasha doesn't have to imagine what the man in the bed will see when he wakes. She knows. Is this gonna take long? Her answer is two quiet raps on wood. A polite knock. Wake up. Death is here. To his credit, Michael Schuller comes awake instantly and alertly. He scrambles for something, a weapon probably, and Winter disarms him like Tasha takes things from dummy. A single motion, no hesitation, no resistance. Schuller stills. What do you want? Not, who are you? He's not very good at pretending to be a helpless elderly man retired on a farm. A click. It's the lock on the new mask Tasha made Winter, on his request. One that lets him speak, but keeps his face hidden. "Do you know my face, Dr. Schuller?" he asks, his voice colored in an accent that's not real. Not anymore. Hesitation. A sharp inhale.
Whatever the man did for S.H.I.E.L.D. for 30 years, he's a shitty liar.
No.
Liar.
No, please, I have no idea who you are. What do you want?
Clothes rustling. Winter moving.
Stripping.
She understands after a moment. A gasp.
Your father helped do this to me, Dr. Schuller. I need to know what you know.
Something changes in Schuller, in what he sees, because the next time Tasha hears him speak, he doesn't sound afraid at all anymore. He sounds amazed.
He told me about you. Good Lord, but I never thought...
He said you were almost immortal, but I never really believed...
But you don't even look 30.
He developed the technology to graft the metal onto your nerve endings.
Is it true you can control the arm like a real limb?
A scientist excited over a project, a creation. Something they made. Something they built.
It's pride, it's arrogance. It's the way you look at something you own. Proprietary and possessive. My car, my house, my secret weapon.
The way you look at a thing.
I'm sorry,
Tasha blurts.
If I ever sounded like that while talking about your arm, I am so sorry.
Of course, there's no answer. Your father told you.
Taught you.
About Hydra.
Yes.
Eager.
He told me the day would come when the Hydra rises again, but I didn't think... I didn't really believe it anymore. Is that why you're here? Is there something you need me to do for you? Your arm?
No. A beat.
Oh, then what?
Tell him you need to destroy everything he has on Hydra. That there's someone coming for him. He'll fall for it.
He sounds like a fanboy. Someone completely convinced of what he's saying. The Hydra and its mission.
Hell, fucking Hydra. She doubted. In some tiny fraction of her mind, right up until this second, she doubted. That Hydra lived, that it was active. That it was S.H.I.E.L.D. Some minuscule part of her thought they'd end tonight on a bus and go home. Vendetta done. She wants to throw up. It's fast becoming a theme in her life. Tinny, she hears Winter repeat her idea.
The man swallows it. Blinded by faith, maybe. You're stupid. He was a scientist, not an agent. But this is... How the hell did he live to retire? How did he not get made decades ago? But then, if no one asks the right questions, he'd have no reason to go blabbing answers. And he does have Hydra's secret weapon standing in his bedroom, and no reason to assume the Winter Soldier is any more than the tool his father described him as. Probably in tall, exaggerated tales, the same way Howard spoke of Captain America. Like something he made.
The two men move downstairs, then into a basement Tasha can't see.
Shielded. Clever. She wonders if the idiot built it, or someone else.
Here's paper rustling, a computer booting. Clacks of a keyboard.
Is that all?
Yes, like I said, I was starting to... I have not worked on much of this for years. Why?
Are you sure?
Yes,
Why are you...
Bones snapping make a peculiar sound. The crack of bone is only a part of it. Overlaid is the wet snap and crackle of tearing muscle and tendon, the dampening qualities of flesh and skin. The grinding of pieces pressing together. Before tonight, Tasha only ever heard her own bones breaking. Sometimes from stupid stunts, sometimes in the lab. Sometimes when her torturers kicked her too hard in the ribs. From the outside, she decides. It sounds a bit like someone snapping a breadstick in half. She breathes through her nose, tries to identify every single smell of the cleansed, filtered air inside the suit. Holds on to that until Winter asks, I need your help. The computer is strange. She takes off, almost without conscious thought, lets Jarvis steer them downstairs, where Michael Schuler lies in a heap on the floor, discarded like trash. Winter kicks him into the side, then grabs his shoulder to push him away from the bank of screens, making room for Tasha. She looks away. Jesus, the system is antiquated. Like, the 90s want their setup back. Does that even... Nope, of course not. No USB. Fuck me. Jarvis?
The computer seems to run on an isolated system. I cannot access it at all. He reports.
Crap. Look around. See if you can find CDs or, and I can't believe I'm saying this, floppy disks. Little flat squares with a metal part on one side. The Winter Soldier. Because that's who he is. Mask back in place. A dead body in the corner. Nods and gets to work. There are chemicals in the upstairs bathroom that make a nice boom. Alcohol in the living room that makes it flare brighter. Tasha already turned the basement to scrap after wiping the system. Trashed the whole place. Winter put Schuler by the back door, made it look like he tried to run from something. Someone. Then Tasha sets it all ablaze. They watch long enough to be sure all evidence of them, of Hydra, is erased before taking off, Winter Soldier on Iron Man's back, toward a little derelict private airstrip Tasha found them. The plane waits for them where she put it, ready to take them to Chicago. From there, they'll get to New York by car. A little sleight of hand, and everyone will believe Tasha arrived via plane from LAX. She concentrates on that, on making the timetable. Checking all systems, taking off. Keeping her steady. Landing. Moving unseen. Keeping the suit. Newly compressed into a case. Get it? Suitcase! Out of sight. She keeps moving, moving, moving. Tunnel vision behind two big sunglasses. Her new bodyguard carrying her bags. Such a gentleman. Until they arrive at her father's manor. And the doors slam closed behind them. The place is clean. Of course it is. Even though she hasn't set foot in it in over a decade. Preferring hotel rooms over this tomb whenever she's in town. It's a shrine. Obi used it. Sometimes. And she wonders if she'll find any more entombed weapons in the hidden nooks and crannies. Any ghosts besides those she left here. A little girl with crooked pigtails and perpetually burnt fingers from circuits not meant for curious six-year-olds, distracting themselves from their father's drunken rambling. Jarvis? She asks.
Secure.
Is all he says. All he knows she needs to hear right now. The next moment, she's sinking to the black and white checkered floor, falling into herself, hands clutching at her aching chest. It's weird. She only changed the core out yesterday, but it hurts. Tasha?
She blinks twice, and Winter is sitting in front of her, his legs long on either side. Like two children sitting in the yard in summer, they stay there, staring at each other, for a long time. What's wrong? Sometimes he reminds her of a little boy, clueless and curious and entirely uncomprehending of the atrocities and complexities of this world. They just murdered a man and burned his corpse together, and he doesn't understand what's wrong with her. With a choked chuckle, she answers. Nothing. Just came to the belated realization that I'm not a very good person. She half expects him to argue, to tell her what Pep and Rhodey and so many others have. You're a good person, Tasha. You're just being stupid, Tasha. And all the while, she knew that they were lying to spare her feelings. But Winter doesn't work like that. Neither am I, he points out, very quietly. His hands have wandered to her knees, one warm, one cool. She doesn't notice the contrast anymore, not really. It's simply part and parcel of him by now. Some days, she can't quite remember what life was like without her 6-foot shadow. Bullshit, she snaps, reflexively, because it is. Utter bullshit. No bad thing you ever did was your choice. Tonight was. So he does understand what this is about. Yeah, she acknowledges. And it took 70 years of torture to get you this far. And because she knows he won't get it, she adds. You know what my first thought was when I figured out what that chair was for? The drugs? It wasn't, oh my god, this is horrible. It wasn't, what have they done to him? It was, this would be amazing. I found the tools they used to brainwash you, and I thought that was a spectacular idea. Because it could make me forget about all the ugly truths that turned my life to shit. I thought, how nice it would be to be able to forget. To go back to being the numb, stupid bitch I was before. Killing people by the thousands and not giving a flying fuck. That's not what good people do. She really believes that. He sits on the cold floor with her, watches her face twisted in agony over what she thinks she is and isn't, and knows she really believes she is a bad person. Because she considered, for a few moments, an escape from the nightmare her life has become. Because her first thought was for herself and not a complete stranger. Because she's human. He knows she thinks he doesn't understand a lot of things, and she's right. Emotion escapes him. But he is fully capable of observing human behavior, and he understands that Tasha Stark is the best person he can remember meeting. Not entirely good, perhaps, certainly not pure or innocent, but the best. She saved him. She gave him choice. And when choice becomes too much, she takes over. Waltzes right over him and gives him time to catch his breath. He has heard her reasoning for why she's going after Hydra, the weapons, her new grudge against Fury. It's all a smokescreen. He is fully aware of that, even if she isn't. He asked her for help, and she's working herself to the bone to give it to him. Because he asked. Because he has learned in the past few months. Once Tasha Stark considers you one of hers, she'll move heaven and hell for you. And Winter, well, whatever he is, whatever is left of him, is hers. But none of these things will move her, will even reach her. So he just grabs her hands, rolls into a crouch that pulls her to her feet.
I don't care,
he tells her, as decisively as he can.
I don't give a flying fuck.
As he knew it would, the expletive makes her laugh. She stumbles into his side, and he swings her up into his arms.
Bridal style again?
She teases. A bit flat, but with honest effort.
Be glad I don't carry you over the threshold.
Which way? Upstairs. Pick any room that isn't the master suite. I am not sleeping in my dead parents' bed. Not for all the cool toys in the world.
Yes, ma'am.
She snorts, buries her face in his neck, and holds on tight. It's enough.
Well,
Brock announces, kicking at a piece of debris, scorched in a circular pattern that is typical for Iron Man's blast weapons. It's the only evidence they have, but it's enough.
I'd say we're done with the threat assessment part. What do you think, Kep?
Stave sighs, shields his eyes to watch a pair of solemn agents carry an empty stretcher away from the site. There wasn't enough left of Agent in Retirement Schuler to need a stretcher.
Teeth, Stave heard tell.
Some bone fragments. Nothing else. Iron Man is definitely not a hero.
Yes,
he answers. I guess we are. Tasha sleeps. Winter doesn't. Instead, he maps the perimeter of this new base, the exits and entry points, weak spots. Jarvis helps, using newly installed equipment to show him the places he knows the assassin will want to test. They spend most of the night that way, walking, guarding their mistress as she sleeps. Winter knows Tasha would yell at him if he ever called her that out loud. Would scream her head off about slavery and agency and choices. And she's not fucking Hydra, thinks a lot. He knows all that. He also knows that Tasha is all he knows. Maybe she won't be one day. But for now, she is. And he thinks of her as a mixture of commanding officer, handler, and Tasha. Something hard as steel and randomly, unbearably kind. His leader. Mistress is as good a word as any for it, even if he will never use it outside the privacy of his own head. As he moves, he finds a balcony on the second floor that overlooks the garden, bathed in moonlight. It's gorgeous and terribly empty. He digs around his pockets for a cigarette, lights it with his left, less clumsy than he used to be. Inhales. He remembers this, smoking, the mechanics of it. Did it sometimes on missions to blend in. Remembers that it wasn't permitted around bony elbows for some reason. He doesn't know why. It calms his mind. Tasha showed him, reminded him. Sometimes she watches him. It's a simple act. Quiet. Still. A forced break. He lets his thoughts curl like smoke. Lets the night air wake him. Clarity. When he is done, he buries the stub in a flower pot, automatically erasing all traces of his presence. Back inside, he wanders. Finds photographs. Many of them are magazine covers, newspaper clippings. Some are family pictures. In all of them is a small, solemn child with dark eyes and darker hair. Sometimes she smiles, waves, shows off some machine or another, a tool. She appears happy, but her eyes are always the same. They never sparkle. An older man stands by her side most often. He seems proud. A woman is there too, sometimes. A carbon copy of Tasha, with more laugh lines and less worry lines. She wears demure dresses and pearls. Howard and Maria Stark do not look nearly magnificent enough to have produced offspring the likes of Tasha. Crap, you found the wall of shame. Tasha announces from behind him. He doesn't jump. Makes a mental note to teach her to move more quietly. Although that's probably a lost cause. Her reactor hums. Not loudly, but loud enough in a house ringing with echoes and ghosts. Shame. She shrugs, unwilling or unable to explain her own quip. Jarvis takes over.
It is customary for people to pretend their childhood pictures shame or embarrass them. A strange cultural phenomenon.
Tasha snorts. Way to make the human race sound like a behavioral experiment, Jar. Is it right? He asks, before the two can derail into one of their petty fights over phrasing. With a frown, she changes the subject completely, asks, Why do you do that? You treat Jarvis like a person, you talk to him for hours, but you still refer to him as it. She sounds defensive, angry, like she is ready and willing to defend the machine she built to the death. Like he imagines a mother would fight for her child. Before he can try to justify his word choice, the child in question pipes up.
It is quite all right, ma'am. We have discussed the issue at length, and I know no offense is meant.
That was a long, complicated night. The voice calm and patient, and Winter floundering to put into words what boils down to machines and weapons have no names and no genders. They are functional. Jarvis understood after a long time.
You think of yourself as a thing.
He realized. The surprise in his voice hurt. Tasha assures me I am a person, he retorted. It was all he had. He is getting better, though. Maybe one day the voice will be male and Winter will be a person. A real boy, Tasha calls it, her smile gentle and warm. She drops the subject now with a shake of her head. Come on, I want to show you something. They make their way through long, confusing corridors until Tasha stops in front of a specific door and turns to him. If it gets too much, you tell me. If you want out, you leave. If you need to talk, ask questions, whatever. You do. Clear? It's not a suggestion. He nods. Good. Then, welcome to my father's neurosis, laid out in red, white, and blue. With that, she pushes open the ornate door and waves him through. The room beyond is blinding. Red, white, and blue, she said. The walls are plastered over with posters in various styles, some framed, some not. All of them depict a man in a flag-themed suit, holding a shield, charging into battle, saluting the artist. Sometimes there are other men behind him, in army colors, following in his wake. Sometimes a tall, statuesque woman stands at his side, slightly behind. All of them look impossibly straight-backed and patriotic. The room itself is filled with display cases and cabinets. There are figurines, shelves full of comics, a weapons display, parts of a soldier's kit, patches of faded cloth, a pair of boots, well worn. There are more things in the far corner, covered by a sheet. He is grateful. What he can see is already overwhelming. And the photographs. There are many, many photographs. They dot the spaces between other memorabilia, are lined up in front of books and comics on the shelves. All of them are black and white. All of them have the same man in the flag outfit. Most of them also have his own face, on frank display with short hair. He smiles in most, laughs in a few. He looks so young. Babe? Tasha asks, careful and quiet, like one would speak at a funeral. This room is a shrine to the dead, and he is one of its ghosts. When he turns to look at her, he realizes he's made his way through half the room. His hands are resting on the glass of a case filled with stand-up picture frames. Inside are childhood pictures. He feels not embarrassed, as Tasha thinks one ought to. Viscerally horrified and grateful at the same time, perhaps. He finds himself in the tall boy's face, his carefree grin blinding the camera. By his side is the man from the other pictures, but he's not big. He's not strong. Instead, he is a wisp of a boy, short and frail and thin-boned. Bony elbows. He knows without asking that the boy's eyes are blue. Were blue. They were blue because Bucky Barnes was born in 1917 and Steve has been lost for so long. Bucky always knew that he would outlive Steve. The other boy was so breakable and sickly, his asthma getting worse with every cold, damp winter. He knew that one day he would wake up and Steve wouldn't be there anymore. Would be in a cold, deep grave next to his mother and father in the cemetery Bucky hated because it was so poor and sad. He thought it might be different for a while during the war. Thought he'd have to leave Steve behind, would never get to go home and see the kid's ugly muck again. He worried about Steve all alone in the world, knew he would try to take care of Bucky's parents and sister and probably work himself into an even earlier grave. And then Steve went and got himself supersized, simply so Bucky wouldn't get to die first, and it was awful and wonderful. When Bucky fell, all he could think was that at least he didn't have to watch Steve die. And that's the problem with loving someone, isn't it? One of you has to die first. Worse, one of you has to die last. He comes to on the floor, much like Tasha earlier. Only his back is pressed against a random cabinet, and he has 130 pounds of Inventor in his lap, her knees digging into his hips, her arms wrapped around his neck and head. His face is buried in her chest, and he smells metal and sweat, and Tasha inhales. Hears her talking, low and soothing. And I hoped like hell this would do nothing. Just, you know, pictures. I hope you wouldn't remember, and how selfish is that? I just want you to be okay, and this can't be. God, I keep trying to imagine what this must feel like, but I have a nearly eidetic memory, and I've never forgotten a thing in my life. And to have all of this coming back, your head must be about to explode. And I'm probably not helping at all. Just tell me what you need and shut up. And I will, I swear, I'm not good at consoling people. I don't know if you noticed. Actually, scratch that. I'm not good at people. I like to build my friends in my lab. Maybe, he interrupts her. That's why we get along. I came out of a lab too. There's a beat of silence, and he knows, without raising his head, that she's wondering whether to laugh or be horrified. And Tasha? Yes? Shut up. She settles on laughing. It's why he loves her. When she's done, she presses a kiss to the crown of his head and starts combing her fingers through his hair, letting him stay still. Letting him hide as long as he needs to. He turns his head fractionally, lets the light of the reactor blind him from so close, lets the smell of sickness and electricity lull him. This is real. This is now. Tasha is real, is flesh and steel and dying warmth. The picture you gave me, he says after a while, just starts talking. I had Steve after the serum. He wasn't... To me, he never stopped being the little twig who constantly picked fights. Big Steve didn't register. And then I saw little him, and it all came back. Or, not all of it. But enough. A lot. He can't remember much about his parents, apart from his mother's home perm. The smell of chemicals on his father's hands, bent and crooked from decades in the factory. Mostly... It's Steve, front and center and larger than life, even when he barely reached Bucky's chin. Bucky. He remembers being Bucky. It feels weird as hell. Makes sense, Tasha agrees. You're being awfully calm. He won't be as soon as she lets him go. As soon as she takes away that one anchor he has, her weight on top of him, her voice telling him what to do. As soon as she lets go, it'll be only him and the carnage in his head, and he'll go mad. He can feel it welling inside of him. The panic, fear, confusion, and the only thing holding it down is the tingle in his legs, where Tasha's weight presses down hard, and the tug on his scalp as she pulls his hair while carting through it. Just don't let go, he begs, voice small. A beat of silence. Make me, she challenges, shifting forward on his lap, pressing even closer. He can barely breathe, and the ringing in his head sounds distant and tinny. Unimportant. In his memory, Steve tells him not to be so dramatic, and Tasha holds him still. It's wonderful. Twenty-four hours later, they're in the basement, putting up Jarvis's hardware and the machinery Tasha needs for her armor. The AI, meanwhile, is busy working with what was on those floppy disks, now that he can read them. It's embarrassing, for Hydra, that is, to have tech so old it's not even compatible with her systems. She needed to go on Amazon and buy an external drive with a USB port. For shame, really. Winter has been acting freer all day. So much so, Natasha is trying to work out a way to ask if he's going back to being Bucky. It's like the last pieces of his personality Tetris have slotted into place, and he's even got a hint of New York in his vowels now. She's sad, honestly, to hear the Russian go. No one's ever pronounced her name quite like he did. Her baby duckling tiger is growing up so fast. She pauses in her work for a moment, Watches him heave a mobile server into the far corner, where the cooling unit is already waiting for it. How's the arm, Sugar Buns? Since he's taking most of the weight with his left and not even looking winded, she figures the answer is good. But he frowns as he puts his load down, rotates his shoulder. The sensory feedback was haywire when I put too much pressure on it. It's annoying. She grimaces. Yeah, I'm happy to blame that on the port, though. There might be a way to fix it, but you'd need neurosurgery for that. Want me to look into it? She worked with what she had on his current arm, and it's a ton better than the last one, circa 1950, but far from perfect. As much as she hates to admit it, there's no better engineer than Mother Nature. Not even Tasha Stark can recreate flesh and blood. I did get somewhere with the synth skin, though. Wanna see? Not waiting for his reply, she's already pulling up the models. He surprises her again when he shakes his head. Nah. Another thing! He's getting all sloppy with his language. It's adorable. Don't want the skin. I like the metal. No point in hiding. That makes her heart swell three sizes, goddamn! She looks down at her chest, where the reactor is glowing brightly above her plunging neckline. Shit, she mutters. You're perfect. No shame at all. He beams at her, and it's almost boyish. Steve was like that too, he tells her. With the air of someone testing out words. Like he's not entirely sure, but it's falling into place as he talks. No shame. Always pushing, pushing, pushing. Doesn't sound like what my old man described. Howard knew Captain America, I think. Steve, he was tiny before the serum, and he picked fights all the time, even though he knew he couldn't win. He was a little shit. A proud grin. You would have liked him. He sounds so utterly convinced of it that Tasha simply shrugs, refrains from answering. Let him have it. What's it like having all that back? He smiles brightly. Hurts, but it's mine. It's so terribly cheesy that she rolls her eyes at him. Hard. He sticks his tongue out, and she rolls her eyes again, and it would probably deteriorate from there. If Jarvis didn't interfere with the politely amused...
If you are quite done, I have finished sorting the information from the floppy disk.
He says floppy disks like a human might say pile of shit. If he had a nose... It'd be all scrunched up. Tech snob, she accuses, delighted, as always, at her AI acting so goddamn human. Not everyone is state-of-the-art shit, buddy. Get used to it.
The encryption was pitiful,
he declares.
All right, what have you got?
A distinct lack of holographic surfaces,
he declares, and... God, he's spoiled. Before she can retort, though, the screen to her left flickers to life, displaying a map of... Yep, that's Alaska. What are we looking at? Winter asks, coming to stand next to her, their shoulders brushing. The map zooms in on what looks like an oversized hunting cabin in the middle of nowhere.
This facility traces back to S.H.I.E.L.D. via various aliases and company fronts. Currently, it houses five scientists working on wormhole theory and a rotation of six guards. It is under the purview of Senior Agent Gerard Williams. He has spent large parts of his career in Eastern Europe and the Alpine regions, both of which we know to be areas where Hydra has maintained a covert but strong presence for decades, thanks to the files Mr. Stain kept.
How'd you find the place?
Incidentally, many of the missives Dr. Shula received originated at that exact geographical location.
Scientists mailing a former colleague is not out of the realm of the, you know, legal and normal, Tasha argues. She's playing the devil's advocate, though, and they all know it. Dr. Shuler was a medical doctor working on bionics theory. These are doing something else, Winter points out, reasonably, and obviously not sure what the hell a wormhole is. Also, why encrypt and hide those conversations? Store them on an isolated system. They were insurance, and that means they're dirty. Tasha concedes the point. So what? We think this Williams guy has the whole base turned around? Basement full of Hydra? Winter flicks through some scanned files on another screen, handling the tech without effort. It's sexy. Tasha clears her throat just as he points at something. All the personnel are handpicked by the boss. The guards consist mostly of his former field team. It seems likely. He looks at the ceiling. Can you get surveillance on them? Track their messages? We need to be sure.
Already done, Mr. Winter.
Jarvis assures and flips the screens off. Thank you. Tasha watches them for a moment, then fondly shakes her head. Let's get back to work. They're having hot chocolate in Central Park. They're in jeans and parkas, a horrible flappy-haired monstrosity for the one-armed bandit, because he still doesn't care about his clothes, as long as they're dark. And until he develops an opinion on this shit, Tasha is going to subtly poke fun at him. They each have a steaming styrofoam cup, although Tasha's, admittedly, is more coffee than hot chocolate. And by more, she means all. Caffeine. Yummy. Apart from the paparazzi, the suitcase cuffed to Winter's wrist, and Jarvis piping up from time to time through their phones, it's almost normal. I remember this, Winter announces, as they sit at the edge of a fountain, sunglasses jammed onto their faces. Because it's freezing, but it's also sunny. The flaps of his hat are fluttering in the breeze, and the fur of Tasha's hood is twitching in time. It's so cute she could puke. But, she figures, might as well go for broke. My babushka died when I was 5, but I remember her sometimes taking me here. She barely spoke English. My pop was Italian. They used to fight in this weird-ass jumble of languages and then start kissing like teenagers in the middle of the kitchen. And I laughed and laughed at them. Mom hated when they did that. She was embarrassed by them. They were as working class as they came, and she was a stark. She snorts. Maria and Howard always went on as if that meant something. Being a stark. It means shit. Is that why your name is Russian? She nods. Yeah, don't ask me where the Starks came from originally. Howard was, like, 50 when I was born. His parents were long dead, and he certainly never told me. He shrugs. Hey, I'm from Brooklyn. That's all I know. He doesn't sound haunted by it anymore. At least, not today he doesn't. Good enough, she assures him. And it is. Suddenly, not paying too much attention, her cup tilts too far, and coffee slops all over her jeans, and she curses up a blue streak that makes an outraged nanny drag away a couple of sprogs too young to understand half of what she's saying. He laughs, grabs the cup from her, and balances it so she can do her hot shit ow dance. When she's done, pants given up as a lost cause, he hands it back to her, and she frowns at it before chucking it into a nearby trash can. She shouldn't have that much caffeine anyway. It's bad for her health. But then, hey, she'll be dead in a couple of months. With a mournful look at the lost goodies, she decides to hell with it and holds out her hand. Cigarette, she orders. What?
He takes off his sunglasses, looks at her sharply. Cigarette! You're stinking up the place anyway, and there's no reason not to. So give me a smoke. Her good mood is ruined. Thank you, reality. Hate you too. Winter forks over the smoke, lights it for her like a gentleman. He doesn't ask. The indignant Nanny gives up and tows her tots away entirely. Tasha smokes in silence for a few minutes. I just killed the mood, didn't I? A little, yeah. Wanna head back? Back to the tomb. Not really. But it's better than being out here. You've turned me into a hermit, she accuses without heat. I doubt it. He counters, pulls her to her feet. Want to hang out in the shrine? You can tell me stories about the glory days, and I can cyberstalk Pepper a little. The weird thing is that she says that without a trace of irony. It's a deal. The new driver, the one Tasha got when she signed Happy over to Pepper permanently, is waiting for them at the gate, privacy screen already up. He's perfectly bland and perfectly polite, and Tasha suspects him of being a pepper plant, but doesn't outright check because she likes to let her redheaded friend have her reassurances. Inside the car, she stretches her legs long, knocks her knees into her bodyguard's. He knocks back, slings his metal arm around her shoulders. Her hair instantly gets caught in the seams now that he's taken off his jacket. But she doesn't care, just leans into him. It's not true that he turned her into a recluse, but he did change her. Keeps doing it like this. Touches her, lets her be quiet. Makes her do things like spend the night in her father's psycho worship shrine to Captain America, actually sitting still. Tasha hasn't let anyone touch her since Afghanistan, and especially not men. Even Rhodey doesn't get to touch her anymore. But Winter does. Winter ripped Fury away from her, and Winter would kill for her. And even in the early days when he choked her regularly, she never feared that from him. He's a killer, not a rapist. Her heart almost beat out of her battered chest with fear sometimes when he surprised her, when he was still more specter of death than person, when he was still too frighteningly blank. He scared her. But somehow he was still okay to touch her. He slipped in under the wire somehow. Pepper is interviewing people for the position of PA. For herself, not for Tasha. Tasha put her foot down, claimed Winter was enough, and didn't explain any more. She scared Pep with it, probably, but there was no way around it. The camera in front of her office is visual only through the glass walls, and Tasha watches on her tablet as 6 candidates enter and leave just as fast. She makes a game of trying to pick out the flaw that got them eliminated. One is dressed sloppily. One is 2 minutes late. One wears her blouse unbuttoned in a way you can only pull off if you're A, in a porno, or B, have a bionic implant between your tits. Number 4 has no obvious disqualifier, but Pepper stares at her CV for 30 seconds before waving her away. Quickly. Number 5 is escorted off the premises. Number 6 runs out in tears. Number 7 stays inside the office for 7 minutes longer than the longest-lasting contestant so far. She has red hair, which is an automatic plus, and wears killer heels. She also fills out that pinstripe skirt really, really well. Is this that sexual harassment thing? The sassy assassin to her left asks. They've liberated a mattress from one of the unused rooms because they spend most of their evenings here when they're not in the labs. Tasha fiddles. Winter goes memorabilia diving.
She has no idea where the blankets came from, though. Or why they're sitting with their legs all tangled up. It's not sexual harassment when I'm not technically her boss. Also, I'm perving via security camera. That's completely different.
So much less stalkerish, Tom.
I need to restrict your access to the internet.
I dare you,
he retorts. And, with a decisive snap, finishes reassembling the old service rifle he found in one of the cabinets. It was lumped in with a whole bunch of Howling Commando stuff. There are letters carved into the butt. BB. He sights down the length of it, finger over the trigger. Is this thing even still usable? He shrugs. If I can find bullets for it, I can try. It's the work of 2 minutes to find the right ammunition online and order it. By the time she flicks back to the video feed, Pepper is standing, bent across the desk, shaking the younger redhead's hand. She looks pleased, and from the way the new PA stops on her way out, displays one foot coyly, she also likes the other woman's shoes.
Oh, God, Tasha thinks. There's two of them now.